Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hi, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Laura Rantz. In this week's program, we're talking about the fourth revolution in agriculture and what that means for farmers and industry in Canada. We'll hear about how the courts are sending a strong message about farm safety to the agricultural community and how farmers are having to adapt their use of crop protection products to keep their customers happy, and of course, the latest in grain markets. First up is a new report released this week by the Royal Bank of Canada called Farmer 4.0, How the Coming Skills Revolution Can Transform Agriculture. One of the key findings is that the digital revolution in agriculture will employ more people, not less. But it also says that the skills needed will be vastly different in the future. The report's authors have laid out a long list of challenges that the Canadian industry must overcome if it is to reach its potential as a global player. Joining me to talk about Farmer 4.0 is Andrew Shrum, Senior Manager of Research for the Royal Bank of Canada. Hi, Andrew, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me.
Now, this is quite an interesting report, and it's at a very interesting time, as we know, for Canada, particularly on the trade front. But how is the so-called fourth revolution in agriculture set to reshape the whole agricultural sector here?
Well, as we've seen in the history of agriculture, it's an industry that is always open to change and innovation. We say in our report that we're entering a fourth agricultural revolution. The first, occurred about 100 years ago, where we saw subsistence farming moving to specialized farming. By the middle of last century, we saw the proliferation of more advanced machinery taking the field and turning farmers into farm operators. In the 70s and 80s, we saw the advent of software and crop genetics really change the way that the inputs came to play. What we're seeing now, it's already begun, but it's really taking force today and into the 2020s, is a fourth revolution where agricultural technology is shaping how and who works on the farm and using more and different types of inputs, going from data all the way to genetic seeds.
I think many people equate automation and sort of the new technologies such as robotics with a requirement to have fewer people employed by the sector. But this study actually suggests we need to be attracting more people to the sector rather than less. And I just wondered, like, how is that going to look?
Absolutely. So, this paper is a part of a larger RBC study under the umbrella of Humans Wanted, which is the name of a paper we produced last year. When we took that across the country, we spoke from people in the oceans economy, we spoke to people in education, in different trades. You know, the common message we kept hearing was that as the future of work comes to play, and technology permeates every task that we take on, it produces different skill sets and requires different types of workers. The story isn't that we'll need less, is that we'll need more. We heard from agriculture producers across the country who wanted to know more about what RBC had to say in its skills research for the industry, and that's why we took this on. And we think it's a really interesting case study for the rest of the country to understand what's happening in agriculture. The industry itself has been the bulwark of productivity over the last 20 years, leading every sector at about 5.5% productivity growth.
Wow.
But what we've seen in recent years is a bit of a decline where that innovation is coming back down to earth. So when we are looking forward to the 2020s, we see the need for an aggressive skills agenda and innovation agenda. And what we try to do in our paper is to set five distinct skills groups, each which they're undergoing their own transitions and will demand different amounts of people and different skill sets that go along with them.
So where are the most critical shortages going to show up?
Well, the biggest one is where you might expect it, and it's in the category we're calling the doers. This is the traditional kind of farm laborers, farm hands. But when you break it down at a task level, the amount of work needed to fulfill the yield and output objectives of Canadian farms, you obviously need more and more of those tasks. The question going forward for the doers is whether or not those tasks will be filled by human workers or they'll be filled with machines. For the other types of workers, some of which we've dubbed the enablers, these are the mechanics and installers who are bringing in these new types of technology. We see about a 17% demand growth for these roles. So these are coming from automotive sector, they're coming from different types of education. I spoke with an agricultural mechanic from Saskatchewan who left the mining industry to join agriculture because of the exciting innovations happening on the technology side. You know, we're also seeing this growth in consultants, you know, whether they're agronomists, whether they're financial advisors. We see an enormous opportunity here for people of various backgrounds, from business training, from health training, from other sciences, to come into the agricultural sector to drive the skills and innovation agenda.
When you look at that list of the types of capacities that need to be filled, I mean, I think in the past we've looked to the farmer, the lowly farmer, as sort of filling all of those needs, but it's becoming clear that there's going to be a lot more specialization in some of these roles going forward.
Absolutely. And you know, that harkens back to some of the earlier generations of agricultural revolution as we've laid out here. That as the industry evolves, it requires that the farm operators also evolve. You know, we put them front and center in our report, and what we've tried to label this group is the deciders, because it is the farm operators who are at the front lines of deciding what resources to put at play in their operations, whether they be human, financial, or physical resources required. And with all these competing forces, competing interests, and certainly dealing with limited access to capital, the deciders play a critical role in driving the future of the industry.
You know, your report points out that there's a lot of potential for growth for Canada as an agricultural exporter, but that we're actually going the wrong direction right now. What's going on there?
Well, one of it's deceiving in the sense that we are growing our exports, we are growing our output. The problem is the rest of the world is doing it faster. When we think about some of our traditional key exporters, whether they be in the U.S., in Europe, and more developing economies where we try to make inroads, whether they be India and China, all of those regions or countries are also taking on this challenge themselves, and they're upping their game. What we wanted to illustrate in the report is to say there's a lot to celebrate, but there's a lot of work ahead, whether that is solely on the innovation side, whether it's on the human capital side, and put those together, you need a more knowledge-intensive workforce, and we need to be working collectively as a nation to get there.
You pointed out that our investment in technology, our rates of investment are actually falling behind that of some of the emergent economies.
Absolutely. You know, it's exciting to see, you know, as I got to tour across the country, whether it be visiting, you know, Ag in Motion in Saskatchewan and seeing a lot of the innovations there, from some of the drone technologies to the DOT autonomous tractor, or more closer to home here for me, visiting some vertical farms in the GTA. There's a lot of exciting things happening in Canadian agriculture. The challenge is scale. The challenge is capital, and for our space, we're seeing our ag tech investment.
Where do we start as far as turning this around or getting Canada on top of the potential that it has?
Yeah, you know, we crossed the country. We spoke with ag producers. We spoke with industry folks. We spoke with educators. One of the things that kept coming out in the conversations we had in when we were looking at the skill sets needed is that agriculture needs to be an interdisciplinary education. It needs to be an interdisciplinary career. So we're seeing some really exciting developments across the country. You know, in education, we're seeing old college and their smart farm developing the new Techronomy program, where they're integrating software and database management into their agronomy. At the University of Winnipeg, you're seeing physics and computer science teachers leading the digital agriculture program. So these intersections of the way we teach, the way we educate, and how we think about agriculture as being central to all these other disciplines will help to build these skill sets.
So what's the next step as far as what you're doing with this report?
So as I mentioned, RBC is very much interested in how Canada is advancing skills, how it's transforming education, and preparing youth for careers of the future. We see in agriculture, unfortunately, fewer and fewer young people choosing agriculture as a chosen career path. You know, through our Future Launch program, we've invested in a number of different programs across the country, one of which being at the University of Saskatchewan, where we're helping to prepare agriculture students for careers in the field. We're trying to do this on a national level, but we can't do it alone. So we want to be working with different industry groups and setting out some of these big questions and challenges to see how Canadians will innovate and respond.
Well, thanks very much for joining us, Andrew.
Thanks for your time, Laura.
That was Andrew Schrum, Senior Manager of Research for the Royal Bank of Canada. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host, Laura Rantz. This is Between the Rows. I'm your host, Laura Rantz. The accidental loss of a child is an unbearable tragedy for a family to endure. It's even worse when that accident, in hindsight, was found to be preventable. In a precedent-setting case, an Ontario court ruled recently that a farmer in that province was criminally negligent in the death of his 4-year-old son. Although no jail time was meted out, he was handed a 10-year driving suspension and ordered to perform 240 hours of community service. Joining me now is Rob Gobay, the Agricultural Health and Safety Specialist with the Canadian Agricultural Safety Association, to talk about the ruling and the message it sends to the farming community. Hi, Rob. Thanks for joining us on Between the Rows.
No problem, Laura. Glad to be here.
What happened on that Ontario farm the day that resulted in these charges?
Well, just to recap the incident itself, the farmer, he took his two young children for a ride in the bucket of his skid steer loader. Unfortunately, his 4-year-old son was killed when he fell out of the bucket. And like you had said earlier, this is a precedent-setting case as he was charged with criminal negligence and he received a suspended sentence with a 10-year driving prohibition and 240 hours of community service. And again, no jail time was handed down in the ruling.
So was this little guy run over, or was he killed when he fell out of the bucket? What happened there?
Details are somewhat hard to find. Specific details are hard to find, but logic would say he was probably run over or crushed in the incident.
Now, we know the sentence. What did the judge say when the ruling was handed down?
Well, the media has reported that the judge acknowledged that the farmer's behavior was reckless and the consequences of his actions were foreseeable. They also said that this is a rare event and that the farmer has paid the ultimate price with the death of his son.
How many children die on Canadian farms every year?
It's hard to get a specific number to tell the truth, just due to the way that the agricultural injuries are reported. Unfortunately, all we have to go by is coroner reports.
Okay.
But we do collect data. So according to the Canadian Agricultural Injury Reporting data, children killed in farm-related incidents are A, mostly children of the operator or owner, which are 72% of the time. B, they're not working, so they're bystanders. That would be about 80% of the time.
Okay.
And another 80% of the time, they're also male. And the top three mechanisms of fatal injuries for children on the farm are due to runovers, drownings, and rollovers. So of the children run over, these children were most frequently extra riders on farm equipment, and the others were bystanders.
So there's some fairly clear patterns emerging in terms of what the data is telling us.
Yeah, exactly. Two of the three top mechanisms of fatal injuries are tractor-related. So the stance we like to take at CASA is we just promote keeping children away from tractors in general. It is clearly, according to statistical information, not a safe place to be. And simple logic would just say, you know, a good responsible thing to do is just keep children away from all tractors and equipment.
A court ruling like this one sends a very powerful message, I think, to people in the community. But is that what the intent was here, do you think?
Well, we're hoping that it sends a message to all farmers that safety has to be a priority on the farm. Of course, everybody in general wants to go to bed the same way we woke up that morning. That goes without saying. But hopefully this case will send a message and remind everybody that they have a legal responsibility for health and safety in a workplace. This is also the challenge in the ag sector, because the farm is a workplace, but it's also where we live and raise our families.
I think many farm families take a lot of pride in including their children in farm activities, and those of us who grew up on farms sort of had a sense of there's things that we learned on the farm that we might not have learned otherwise in a different environment. But how do parents find the right balance between instilling a work ethic and passing on their knowledge about agriculture while keeping their kids safe?
Yeah, that's very true. The farm is an awesome, great place to live and raise children. Actually, farming, it's proven that farm families and farm children are actually somewhat healthier due to being exposed to different biologicals and whatnot as well. Their immune systems are boosted because of that activity. But that being said, parents must make complex decisions on a daily basis in order to balance the safety and adequate supervision of their children. And also, we have to ensure as parents that we get the necessary work done in order to make a living and have an income for our family. So parents must also make these decisions based on their child's physical and cognitive abilities.
So, Rob, what resources are available to help farm families identify age-appropriate tasks and activities for their children on the farm?
Well, one of CASA's partners is Cultivate Safety, and they have really great work guidelines and infographics as well. These guidelines are interactive, and they are a really useful tool to help ensure the safety of children and youth when working on the farm. So these guidelines can be found at www.cultivatesafety.org.
So that's www.cultivatesafety.org.
Yes, that's right.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Rob.
No problem. Glad to be here. And we just hope that more conversations come from this situation. The more conversations we have about safety on the farm, the better the situation will be and the more awareness that will be raised.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
That was Rob Gobay, the Agricultural Health and Safety Specialist with the Canadian Agricultural Safety Association. It used to be that farmers could grow their crops, harvest them, and sell them with little scrutiny from the outside with regards to the tools and management strategies that they used. But those days are gone. Farmers are being bombarded, it seems, with restrictions on how they use products on their farms, especially products that are used close to harvest. Customers are becoming increasingly stringent over what they will or will not accept, and industry groups have been working hard to get that message out. Alan Dawson of the Manitoba Cooperator has been following the Keep It Clean campaign coordinated by a coalition of commodity groups. He's joining me to talk about what they're saying and how farmers are reacting. Hi, Alan.
Hi there.
So what's the Keep It Clean campaign all about?
It's a campaign aimed at farmers and retailers with a message of being careful about what kind of products you use on your crop during the growing season, including pre-harvest applications of glyphosate, which is increasingly coming under scrutiny from buyers and consumers. But it's not just glyphosate, it's other products, inputs, fungicides, insecticides, herbicides that some customers may not have approved in their country or have concerns over certain maximum revenue limits so that there are certain levels that cannot be exceeded.
Just so we're clear, if a country hasn't established an MRL or maximum residue limit, the tolerance is basically zero, correct?
That's right. If there's no tolerance, no MRL set, then any kind of trace amount would be not allowed.
So what are some of the restrictions that customers are putting into place?
Well, with glyphosate, we're seeing companies I know in the area I live and work from, one of the local buyers of edible beans informed farmers this summer that they won't allow glyphosate pre-harvest to be used on edible beans, even though it's registered for that, and that's because of customer concerns. In fact, just a little anecdote, when I was at an auction sale in June, first thing a young farmer I hadn't seen for a while said to me, "How long do we have for glyphosate?" And it was partly the result of just being informed by this bean buyer that he couldn't apply glyphosate pre-harvest on his beans this fall. And it also, I think, it reflects the growing scrutiny that we're reading and hearing about from customers and people around the world, including those lawsuits related to glyphosate.
So, you know, people are nervous about it. This really has nothing to do with regulatory authorities. This is the marketplace saying we're just not comfortable with this.
That's right. And some farmers have expressed concerns around that because they correctly note in some cases the concerns that are being raised are not necessarily based in science. And, you know, for a long time now, a lot of farmers will know this already, that most maltsters will not accept barley that's been treated pre-harvest with glyphosate because of concerns around the impact on germination, which is a critical part of the malting process. And oats as well, in some cases, buyers have said we're not accepting oats that have been treated pre-harvest with glyphosate. And again, those things are not necessarily label restrictions, but just the market demands. So it's coming back from the marketplace specifically not to use these products in some cases. And I should also note that the message from the Keep It Clean campaign, which involves the Canola Council, Pulse Canada, and Cereals Canada, it held a webinar on this topic a while ago, and it was very blunt in its message. I think up until now, the industry has tried to be a bit nuanced,
I think trying to avoid maybe attention from the non-farming community around this issue, but now they're just coming right out and saying, Cam Dahl, president of the of Cereals Canada, said, you know, very bluntly, that if farmers misuse glyphosate in terms of pre-harvest, that they could use this very valuable lose this very valuable herbicide in the future.
Well, I think a lot of farmers, like you say, maybe get their backs up a little bit in that they're playing by the rules. Like, I mean, they are using the product as they've been told they can use it in a lot of cases, but they're hearing that they maybe can't be doing that anymore. But what's at stake if, you know, if farmers don't comply with this?
Well, there's a lot at stake. Obviously, as we've just been talking about, market access is a big one, and we see that right now and have for a couple of years. Italy has essentially a country of origin labeling Canadian durum, and they've been sort of bad mouthing Canadian durums, claiming that it, you know, has pre-harvest glyphosate on it, and that's an issue. That is a non-tariff trade barrier. Country of origin labeling's outside of the rules with the free trade agreement with Europe. But also, there's the big risk as well is losing glyphosate as a herbicide. We keep seeing these attacks on the product in the courts, major lawsuits around people claiming that it's caused cancer, and there have been billions of dollars in awards given out. So market loss, but also I think the fate of the herbicide itself hangs in the balance potentially. And of course, most Western Canadian farmers know how critical glyphosate is as a non-selective herbicide in a zero-till or no-till system. The pre-seed burn-off is absolutely critical, and of course, even to conventional tilling-type farmers, more and more are reliant on glyphosate-tolerant crops, soybeans, canola, corn. So, you know, if glyphosate is not an option at all, this has major implications. But I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but we do see this growing pressure. And certainly the most immediate pressure is on market access, using residues as a non-tariff trade barrier, and also the, you know, the complaints or the desires of end users not to have that product used if they don't want it used. And I should also point out, Laura, that farmers can get a lot of information on this from the Keep It Clean website. In particular, pulse crops, for example, there's many different products that depending on the market should not be used. So the message is, you know, check that website about the products you're using, and also speak to your buyer. See what the buyer is saying about what you can and cannot use. It's not just glyphosate. There are other products that are of concern, but glyphosate being arguably the most important herbicide in the world, it's a tool that farmers, I think, will really want to maintain.
Generally speaking, I mean, do you have a sense of how farmers are reacting to all this?
You know, when we tweeted out the story that we had in the Manitoba Cooperator a little while ago, I had one farmer email me that, and he was a bit concerned by the headline, and he also was worried about drawing attention to this problem. Not that it shouldn't be an issue that farmers should be aware of, but his concern was that it will, you know, sort of make matters worse, bring more scrutiny from consumers and buyers. And that certainly is a risk, and it was something that one of the people on the webinar, Keep It Clean webinar, acknowledged, but said his view was that by being frank and open about this topic will likely signal to buyers that Canada is trying to deal with this issue, trying to meet customer needs, and is taking it very seriously. So it's a double-edged sword. Nobody wants to draw attention to a problem, but at the same time, the industry leaders fear that if they don't get people complying better around these issues, that, you know, it's going to come back to bite everybody.
Well, I'm sure we'll be hearing more about this in the future, Alan. Thanks very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
That was Alan Dawson. He writes for the Manitoba Cooperator. Our last item today is a brief look at the markets with Phil France-Workington of Markets Farm. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Laura.
I say brief because from what I understand, there's not a whole lot going on right now. Are we in kind of a holding pattern?
Yeah, it's kind of wait and see mode right now, waiting to see, you know, harvest is getting started here in Canada and it's still a ways away for the soybeans and corn in the U.S. So it's kind of that time of year where everyone on the in the market is, you know, sitting on their hands until they get a better sense of what we're actually dealing with for a crop.
But there is one report coming out this week. Is it that's the Statistics Canada report? How much stock do people put into that?
Well, it will be the numbers that we have to work with, and there will be some the stock they put into it is not a lot usually. It's quite the cottage industry of whatever Statistics Canada says. Oh, we don't agree with this. And the timing of the survey, they conducted the survey back in like about a month ago by now. And so at that time, thoughts on how the crop would turn out are different than how it will actually turn out. So there's a lot of second guessing, whatever they have. But for better or worse, it will be the official number, and it will move the market for at least a little bit until we get a better sense of the actual yields.
Is there advance projections on what it might say, or are people still holding their cards close to their vest there?
Yeah, for the canola crop, there's anywhere from about 18 million up to 20.5 million tons is the estimates we've been hearing, and that compares to that would generally most estimates below last year. We grew 20.3 million tons. So looking at either the same or slightly smaller crop is what people are expecting. Again, whether or not what Statistics Canada says, we'll see. Only 2 weeks from now, they're going to have another report with satellite imagery, and that'll be kind of compile the surveys with satellite technology and they've only been doing that for the past 2 or 3 years now. So there's still some kinks being worked out on that. But the idea is that will be a more solid number because of the greater amount of data that goes into it.
So prices are kind of holding steady. Are they in a good place or a bad place with that steadiness?
Depends if you're buying or selling, but if you're selling, they're in a bad place. They've been kind of trending down or at the kind of lower end of ranges that they've been in. So it's prices are not the strongest. We've got the whole China trade situation, and there's not a lot of good news or bad news somewhere else in the world that would be good for Canadian prices to bump up prices. But there is always, seems like every other day there's some new news out of the U.S. on kind of Chinese U.S. trade, which never seems to come to anything, but is enough on a day-to-day basis to bump prices every once in a while. But
we've had a couple of days of rainy weather here on the eastern prairies, which has put everything on hold as far as harvest goes. But what's your sense of how the moisture situation is across the prairies? It's too late for this year's crop, but are we seeing some optimism in terms of the fact that it's still raining?
Yeah, it's definitely, the large areas went into this year with no rain from the previous year already. And I was just talking to someone earlier today about chickpeas. So, he was saying, you know, it was looking, you know, they seeded the crop into dust and nothing, you know, what's going to happen. And then, you know, then they got rain in the bottom of the ninth, basically, is what he said. And then there might not be the best crop ever, but it will probably end up average overall. And so then that's kind of the case with a lot of crops with where the moisture fell and maybe brought a bit of disease as well. But you take one or the other and you'd rather have something than nothing.
Right. Well, I think we'll have to keep our eyes tuned to sort of our ears tuned to what the reports coming forward have to say. But we really appreciate you joining us today to talk about this.
Well, thanks for having me.
That was Phil Franz Workington. He's a reporter with Markets Farm. Well, that's all we have for you this week on Between the Rows. But we'll be back again next week. Hope to see you back too. Thanks for joining us. I'm Laura Rantz.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to etr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.